following is the class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mandi Lila, Chapter 25, Text Number 33, given by His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on August 20th, 2000, in Innisroth, Ireland.
So it's a Sunday morning Chaitanya Charitamrita reading, up to Madhya Lila, Chapter 25, the residents of Varanasi become Vaishnavas, and I was told it's at verse 33. The verse is not on the board, is it? Okay. Brahma Shabde Kahe Sat Aishvarya Purna Bhagavan Tanre Nirvishesha Stapi Purnata Hayanan. So the person speaking is a disciple of Prakasananda Swami, and it is said that this disciple is as learned as his spiritual master, and he has become convinced that Lord Chaitanya's conclusions are right, and that the impersonalist interpretation of Vedanta Sutra is misleading. It appears that this disciple, he got convinced even before his spiritual master. But then what happens in this chapter, Prakasananda Maharaj and all his disciples and all the people of Varanasi become Vaishnavas. So this is amazing because of Varanasi is the, also known as Benares today, is the capital of the Mayavadi sannyasis. The Vaishnavas don't like to stay there. But Lord Chaitanya, he posted two special devotees to stay there, Tapran Mishra and Chandrasekhar, because he knew that he had some pastimes that he wanted to enact there, and they would be crucial in it. But they didn't like living there. They wanted to live in a holy dham. But they knew that Lord Chaitanya wanted them to be there. So this pastime is described fully in the seventh chapter of the Adi Lila. But he left some things out. In the seventh chapter, it describes how Prakashananda and his followers were blaspheming Lord Chaitanya, calling him a sentimentalist for singing and dancing in the streets instead of studying Vedanta. And so this Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar, they was very pained by that. They wished that Lord Chaitanya would speak to him. So finally he did. He took an invitation to go to the house of a Brahmin, Maharashtrian Brahmin, who hosted all the sannyasis plus Lord Chaitanya. And there, Lord Chaitanya beautifully explained the Harinam injunction, that the only way for liberation and purity of heart in this age is to chant the holy name. And he told about himself, that he chanted because his spiritual master told him to, and he had become mad by chanting, and his spiritual master encouraged him that, good, this is ecstasy of love of God. So these sannyasis heard this much, and they said, well, we have no complaint that you like to chant Hare Krishna, that sounds very wonderful, but we heard you don't study Vedanta. So then he explained the Vedanta Sutra according to the codes themselves, without impersonal interpretation. And then we were just told very briefly that they had prasadam together. So now, so many episodes and chapters later, the author returns to that line of story and tells us not only did they take prasadam together, but these Mayavadis, they felt very regretful and they wanted to surrender to Lord Chaitanya. There's one nice picture that shows Prakashananda Maharaj at the feet of Lord Chaitanya, and tears are gushing from his eyes. And Lord Chaitanya is being very kind to him. And of course, when the guru is doing this, then behind the guru, his disciples, they're amazed, and they have different expressions to see that their guru has taken shelter of Lord Chaitanya, whereas before he had blasphemed him. So this learned disciple, Prakashananda, has been speaking about the superiority of the devotional path. Okay, the verse is, the word Brahman means the greatest. This means the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in all six opulences. However, if we take the one-sided impersonalist view, his fullness is diminished. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is originally the Supreme Person. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshu avastita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The potency of Krishna that is spread everywhere is impersonal. So this is the basic difference. The Mayavadis say that the ultimate truth from which everything comes is impersonal. If you say it's a person, to them that's not possible. We're reading a verse in Belfast a couple of days ago, and Prabhupada used the word anthropomorphism in connection with the Brahamurti. And the anthropomorphism means to attribute to a human being the powers of God. So the impersonalists think that this is what the devotees have done. With the reality of the absolute truth as impersonal, they have somehow created a person to worship, which is idol worship also. Taking a further step in worshiping idols in the temple. Bad enough that he's a person, they say, but now they're worshiping an idol of this person. So they're pretty firm in their conclusion. And this Mayavadi philosophy is very much pervading. The Mayavadi philosophy is been expressed as a second edition of Buddhism. What do we pray to Prabhupada? Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharani, Nirvishesha Sunyavadi, Paschatari Shatarani. Prabhupada has come to the Western countries to defeat Nirvishesha and Sunyavadi. So the Buddhist says the ultimate is nothing. And the Shankaras say, oh, it's something, but it has no personality. And the Christian philosophy is actually personal, but it also, by different teachers, has become more and more impersonal. I was reading, there was one, pretty common, in their liberal search, many Catholic monks and teachers, they're very attracted to Buddhism, especially in as a kind of modern trend. Neo-Buddhism is very popular in America among young Americans and so on, some idea of meditation. And one would think if he's going to be interested in Indian philosophy, why not in Radha Krishna? But they're more interested in the Buddhist meditation. And one comment was made that they find the Buddhist concept of nothingness to be very close to their concept of the fullness of God. In other words, God is so full, he's positive, but he's inconceivably great. And when they hear the Buddhists talking about the no thing, they find a kinship. So Lord Chaitanya has come, and Prabhupada has come to teach the science of God in a way that in personal calamity thou hast moved, the Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. The potency of Krishna that is spread everywhere is impersonal. The sunlight is the impersonal expansion of the sun globe and the sun god. If we simply take one side of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his impersonal effulgence, that one side does not fully explain the Absolute Truth. There's a particular verse in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, and I am the impersonal Brahman, the ultimate source of all happiness. And one devotee wrote to Prabhupada, expressing a little doubt that this verse seems to support impersonalism, that the ultimate Brahman, he says, I am the source of the ultimate Brahman, I am the source of the Brahman, the ultimate source of happiness. And Prabhupada wrote back, you haven't looked at the full verse. The verse says that Krishna is speaking. He says, I am the source of the Absolute Truth. So Krishna is cannot be eliminated. He's the cause of the impersonal, which is the source of all happiness. So this is Krishna consciousness, that we understand that the impersonal is the energy from Krishna. Actually, it's the light coming from Krishna's body. One should also accept the other side, the personal side. Bhagavan, Brahmaiti, Paramatmaiti, Bhagavaniti, Shabyate. One should not be satisfied simply by understanding the Brahman feature of the personality of Godhead. One must also know the Lord's personal feature. That is complete understanding of the Absolute Truth. There can't actually be devotion in the impersonal philosophy. How can you have devotion or love toward no thing? But unfortunately, the impersonalists, knowing that this is true, that there's no love and wanting love, they say, all right, we'll practice bhakti first, because we need to have some kind of personal relationship with God. But then when we get purified, we'll understand tattvamasi, that we are actually all one in impersonal oneness. Then we won't need the support of personalism anymore. Well, that's a blasphemous idea of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So these are a wonderful conversion from his impersonalism, that he's speaking to Lord Chaitanya. That Brahman, if the word means the greatest, what is the greatest? Think of something that is greatest. It's got some qualities to it. The air or something with no qualities cannot be the greatest. It has to have something that makes it great. And it was a Parasara Muni. Mentioned 10 qualities of Bhagavan, which the our Sampradaya has picked up, and Prabhupada teaches it often. Aishvarya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yasasasriya, Gyanavairagya. He who has all beauty, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, and all renunciation. And that's the Bhagavan, the person who is most attractive. Any questions so far on what's going on here? Okay. Shruti Purana Kahe Krishnera Chich Chakti Vilas Tahanahi Mani Pandita Kare Upas. Vedic literatures, the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutra, and the Puranas all describe the activities of the spiritual potency of the Lord. If one cannot accept the personal activities of the Lord, he jokes foolishly and gives an impersonal description. this jokes foolishly is a little unusual. I'm looking in the synonyms, it says Pandit Kare Upasaha, Upahasa. So-called scholars play jokes without perfect understanding. Purport. In the Vedic literatures, including the Puranas, there are full descriptions of the spiritual potency of Krishna. All the pastimes of the Lord are eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge, just as the form of Krishna himself is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Unintelligent people, with a poor fund of knowledge, compare their temporary bodies to the spiritual body of Krishna, and by such foolishness, they try to understand Krishna as one of them. Avanjanati ma mudha manusim tanum asritam. Bhagavad Gita 9.11 points out that foolish people think of Krishna as one of them. Not understanding his spiritual potency, they simply decry the personal form of the Absolute Truth, foolishly thinking of themselves as jnanis, cognizant of the complete truth. Jai Radha Govinda. They cannot understand that just as the material energy of the Lord has a variety of activities, the spiritual energy has a variety also. They consider activities in devotional service the same as activities in material consciousness. Under such a wrong impression, they sometimes dare joke about the spiritual activities of the Lord and his devotional service. So blasphemy takes this form, making jokes at the expense of the devotees and Krishna. This is something that they will have to regret later. The Mayavadis do not recognize the personal form of the Lord as spiritual and full of bliss. This is a great sin. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statements are actually factual. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement especially aims at defeating the Mayavadi conclusion about the Absolute Truth. Since the members of the Mayavada school cannot understand the spiritual form of the Lord, they incorrectly think the Lord's form is also made of material energy. They think that he is covered by a material body, just like other living beings. Due to this offensive understanding, they cannot recognize that Sri Krishna's personal form is transcendental, not material. Their conclusion is a great offense at the lotus feet of the Lord. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna has his eternal blissful form that is full of knowledge, and all Vaishnava Acharyas accept this. That is the proper understanding of the Absolute Truth. Those of us who were not Krishna conscious by birth, not raised in a Krishna conscious family, which is most of us in the West, have become devotees after we've reached our adult years with with the decision that we made, that we were able to make for ourselves, not that somebody made it for us. But we had to overcome different misconceptions. First of all, we were in the grips of sense gratification and didn't care whether God was a person or an imperson or in between. We just didn't want to be restricted. And if there was some religion that was calling restricted on us, we didn't like that. But if we had some searching, some seriousness, and a little time to listen, then we would have to come to grips with this Krishna consciousness teaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a person. I got a letter from one young man in America. He was gradually becoming more attracted to Krishna consciousness by the other young people who were his friends. So he decided, I'll make a plunge. I think I'll go try to live in the temple for a few weeks. So he was writing me that it didn't last a few weeks, it only lasted a few days, and then he felt it was just too much, just too intense. And I thought he was going to say living with all those people was intense, and that sort of thing. Or maybe the personalities of the people. But he said to believe that there's a temple with Radha Krishna deities. He said to believe that Radha and Krishna are God, and to believe that Lord Chaitanya is God, and to be living in the temple, I had to step back from that. So now I'm living back with my parents, and I've started chanting again, and I'm associating with my devotee friends. So it is for the non-devotee, it's very difficult to understand that Krishna is appearing as a transcendental form, and it is a human-like form. But when you start inquiring from a learned person, Prabhupada himself, in his books, and devotees of Prabhupada, if you listen seriously, then you start conceding some of the points that they're making bit by bit. Why can't God be a person? Prabhupada puts it that way. Different people say that God cannot appear on earth. But why do you say, why can't he? Who are you to say that he can't? You say he cannot, but he can if he's God. And why not take he has a beautiful form, and the devotees are attracted to that beautiful form. Listening to these convictions spoken by devotees, our hearts and our understanding starts to change. Humility is also required, and cleanliness of mind is required, and gradually we can, if we're fortunate, we'll start accepting the personal form of God. But if we have to, for some reason, by family connection or some other connection, live with the impersonalists, and they start joking, as we just read, they said, oh, joking about your Krishna, then that's a very bad company to be in. You should not be with people who are like that. It's better to be in a cage of fire. What conviction of Krishna we've gained has taken us a long time, so many lifetimes, and in this body also. Step by step we came. We should not jeopardize it by associating with the person who blasphemes Krishna. Yes.
I'm just trying to clarify for myself the difference between the Mayavadi and the Brahmavadi. And because I've been a little bit sort of, sometimes it hasn't been so clear. if we look at the Mayavadi philosophy, the outcome of it is like basically total atheism and materialism. It's extremely destructive. In other words, completely the opposite of a spiritual outcome. So then, sometimes we see here that the Brahma, the Mayavadi, he's aiming for the Brahma Buddha platform. But it doesn't appear like that's a platform that he would achieve, because that's a platform where there's, one is non-envious, one is, sees every problem and he's equally. He doesn't act in an offensive way, because we hear about the four commandments, they were Brahmavadis,
yeah.
But they were non-envious.
Right. Right.
So it seems like in my body, it doesn't seem possible that you can reach a Brahmavada platform, because just by the envy, the nature of the envy, and just the outcome, the symptomatic outcome of what he believes is just total atheism and degradation.
First of all, the simple definition between the two of them. I think that the Brahmavadi has not yet been exposed to Krishna consciousness. And then when he gets a full exposure to it, then he doesn't delay. Like the Kumaras, their minds were changed by smelling the tulsi from the Lord's feet. And like Sukadeva Goswami, as soon as he heard the Bhagavatam. Whereas the Mayavadi, if he gets some exposure, then he still won't change. He'll just get angry. Oh, Krishna, you rascal, or something like that. But yeah, you're making a point. But one point is that I don't think necessarily a Mayavadi has to be, in the worldly sense of morality, a degraded person. He could be a strict sannyasi, but he could be still an atheist, or like I was saying, the Buddhists. The Buddhists even have in their doctrines, like one of the highest doctrines is kindness to all living beings. And so they go through the world like that. But
Brahmabhuta.
Yeah. Unless they got some mercy. But generally we hear that a Mayavadi, he can enter the impersonal Brahman, and then he'll fall down again. There might be differences according to how, like you say, atheistic, or how much joking, or how blasphemous they were. You think of some atheists like the Muslims in India destroying temples and things like that, killing Vaishnavas. They're obviously going to get reaction to that. Whereas sometimes Prabhupada talks of there are two kinds of transcendentalists, the Mayavadis and the devotees. Sometimes he describes it in a different way, that they are still transcendentalists. But we cannot accept their conclusions. I can't exactly answer your question, that you're saying it seems there's no way that the Mayavadi could even enter the Brahma Jyoti because of their offensiveness and their atheism. But if they they worship the Brahman as eternal, that's something a little positive. Prabhupada tells that little funny story I sometimes play as a tape excerpt, that if a mother gave birth to a child and the child was very unhappy with his life, and so he says to his mother, please put me back in your womb, I don't like life. So she'll say, oh, my poor boy, you don't like life, why is that? But I cannot put you back. And he said, but if the living being asks Krishna that I don't like material life, please take me back in the into the womb, which Krishna can do that, he says. But the question is, how sane is that proposal of wanting to be wound back into the light of Krishna? So it's a kind of, there he describes it as not so much a campaign against personalism, but just a negative attitude towards the existence, wanting to therefore negate it. And Jagan Mitra, the absolute is the universe is false, and the absolute is eternal. So there seem to be some theology to it, and some goal to it that's not just like street atheism of being against God consciousness in some active way. Yes.
Buddhistic philosopher Lord Krishna said that Lord Shiva informed of Shankaracharya, but Shankaracharya, he did more harm than help, actually. I can't understand why Lord Krishna couldn't send powerful Vaishnava Acharya to destroy this Buddhistic philosophy and pave the path for Lord Chaitanya's appearance.
Well, we don't know why the Lord does things the way he wants to. Yeah, it appears he didn't make it very clear, because there were supposed to be incarnations just for a certain period of time, not that their teachings should be propagated perennially. But people mistake that. They said, well, this is what Buddha taught, or this is what Shankara taught. We're following it now. And we say, no, that was for a time. It's not to be continued. So sometimes we hear a statement, just to bewilder the atheist Krishna did that, or just to bewilder, so that they have, just like it appears that at the end of his pastimes, Krishna was hit in the foot by an arrow and he died like a mortal being, or the members of the Yadu dynasty destroyed each other. And Prabhupada or the Shastras will say, as to reasoning why this happened, just to bewilder the atheist, because they want some arguments to hang their atheism onto, so Krishna accommodates them. You want to believe that I am not God, or you want to believe in some Mayavadi philosophy? Here, it's first class. Read the Mayavadi Vedanta Sutra commentary by Shankara. It's beautifully written, and it will bewilder you. So that would be one answer to why he did things that way. But the other answer is that we can't know his inscrutable will, but we have to get the right understanding from Krishna himself as to why he appeared in different times. Because there's even a verse, he states, Krishna in his own words, that I shall appear. I think Lord Chaitanya, he quotes that whatever Purana it's in. And when he did, they were very surprised. He said, I'll explain the Shankara philosophy by quoting. He quotes from the Purana, where Lord Shiva says, in the Kali Yuga, I shall appear and I shall teach such and such. So if you listen to study the scriptures, you won't think that this philosophy is to be followed. But we can't, question Krishna, why didn't you do it a different way? Krishna in general, there's so many things, like, for example, why are there so many religions? Why are the religions fighting against each other? So a lot of this is just Krishna's leniency towards different material desires that we have. So he lets the people do what they want to do, but they'll have to pay for it. They get so many arguments why they can eat animals even though they're religious and so on. Because they want to do that, he gives them a brain to make interpretations from their scripture. Thou shalt not kill. It means this, it means that. Krishna did it clearly, but they find a way, a loophole, to misbehave. I'll read a little more. It's a very philosophical section. The Mayavadis do not recognize the personal form of the Lord as spiritual and full of bliss. This is a great sin. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statements are actually factual. These material bodies are full of suffering. Each one of us is suffering in different ways, mentally and bodily. So this is one reason when the personal philosophy is taught, people say, oh no, I don't want to hear that. That after I die, if I follow this religion, I'll become a person. Then I'll have to live with people and get cheated by them, and I'll have one of these bodies, which is so much pain. Just teach me something where we can enter into some light or something. It sounds very esoteric. and that would be free of all pain. So this is also brought up. Prabhupada speaks of three diseases that people have as to why they don't accept the first, the personal form of God. One is they can just not conceive of anything spiritual. They're just bereft of that, maybe because of past karma. So all they can do is see the universe as it's manifested in different land, you know, trees and water, and then the sky and the stars and everything. So you ask them to understand a spiritual form, they can't. So you tell them, well, the whole thing, that's the universal form of God. Just meditate on that. That's all they can do. And then the other kind, what I just mentioned, they're afraid of becoming persons again. And then the third kind of disease is those who just get angry with all this theological talk and spiritual speculation and established religions. They don't want any established religion. He said this group often takes to hallucinogenic drugs and creates their own religion. So only when we get free of these diseases can we understand the pure religion as taught in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. The Mayavadis do not recognize the personal form of the Lord as spiritual and full of bliss. This is a great sin. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement especially aims at defeating the Mayavada conclusion that the absolute truth. Since the members of the Mayavada school cannot understand the spiritual form of the Lord, they incorrectly think the Lord's form is also made of material energy. They think that he is covered by a material body, just like other living beings. Due to this offensive understanding, they cannot recognize that Sri Krishna's personal form is transcendental, not material. Their conclusion is a great offense at the lotus feet of the Lord. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Krishna has his eternal blissful form that is full of knowledge, and all Vaishnava acharyas accept this. That is the proper understanding of the absolute truth. Anybody else? Any questions or comments? Prabhupada explained that we Westerners are fortunate in not having much background of Mayavadism like those who live in India sometimes have, because they have so many gods and they think that all... It's another form of impersonalism to say worship any of these gods, whatever you feel is your favorite, because in the end they're all one, coming from Brahman. So the people think like that. They all have different gods. And so it was very difficult for Prabhupada to teach that Krishna is supreme. But when he came here, we were intoxicated and nominally part of some religion or not. But somehow it wasn't so difficult for us to accept this, to get past the impersonal barrier and to accept that Krishna is God. Would anyone like to tell me a little story of how they got past impersonalism? Is it vivid enough in your mind that you could say briefly that I was this kind of impersonalism and this is what attracted me? Bhagavad?
I never had a problem with it. I never had a problem with it. I used to pray to God before I was a devotee. I just, it never occurred to me. I have a problem to understand how the impersonalism is in me. Because I don't have a problem with God being personal, but to understand how...
Then how about that God who you prayed to, who is like familiar to you, when the devotees told you, yes, and here he is, Krishna. Were you able to accept that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have accepted that, you know.
There's a wonderful story. It's told by a Marxist, and he may tell it ultimately to deny there's God, but he's honestly telling about his childhood, Maxim Gorky. And he was very much influenced by his grandmother. And at night, before taking rest, she would very informally just speak to God and ask him you know, if you could help so-and-so, and, or different family members, and talk with him, and I'm suffering so much. And but it, he saw that God was certainly real for her, and she would talk to him as real as to anybody else, but expect that he was also all-powerful and all-kind, and we may not be able to understand him. So anyone who has that upbringing is fortunate. Of course, it may also come from past lives, that we weren't some kind of really deviant Mayavadi, like Tulsi Priyaprabhu was saying, how they can really be very much antagonistic to God. Asuram bhavam asrita. Don't even try to give them Krishna consciousness. Yes.
A lot of devotees, they can take to philosophy very easily in the beginning because they feel there's a lot of impressionism out there. I mean, I have gone to several different religions and I felt that this was very easy to take to. Where I find it more difficult is, as you made reference to, like, there was a specified time period where the philosophy should be, like, you know, used or utilized, but it was never meant to be eternally there. I don't know, like, whether it's just phase of Krishna consciousness that I'm at, but like I would perceive that there's a certain mood sometimes amongst the devotees themselves to say, well, you know, that rule or regulation refers to, you know, a different time or a different circumstance, hey, then it's the 90s. How do we tackle that?
Well, they're quite different because if Lord Shiva himself, and it's written in the Purana, if he says, I will come in this age, as Shankara, and I'll bewilder them by teaching the Mayavadi philosophy. That's a lot different than just, you know, with all respects, a common devotee saying, now we're not doing that anymore, we're doing this. And without reference to Prabhupada saying that, yes, and after I leave, you don't have to worship the deities anymore. Rather, Prabhupada, I remember he said it at different times, but I was with him, and we were walking along the beach, and there was something about some changes in the deity worship, and he just stopped in his tracks and he said, this is my greatest fear, that after I leave you will change things. So but it's natural that time will change things, and time will change people. When I was in Belfast, maybe this is the kind of thing you're referring to, one devotee there said about changes are very difficult. She said, "When I think she was a devotee from Eastern Europe country. She said, when I became a devotee, I've been serving, everything is service, service, service. Devotees should do service. And now I'm told to take care of yourself and I forget the other things she mentioned, which weren't necessarily bad things. And so her problem was not that she didn't like what's being emphasized now, but the very fact of that you were doing one thing and now you're told to do something else kind of makes it incredulous. Well, what if I do this for 5 years and then I'm told to do that? I forgot how I answered her, but you should be very careful then not to turn left and then turn right and left just because people are telling you you're not doing the right thing. You should have your own conviction and read Prabhupada's books and consult with your spiritual master, that even if it is a case of there's a saying, you know, the whole world can be on this side, but I'll follow my guru in Krishna. So even if what you're doing is not popular, if you get it, it's not the thing that's being done in the current popular trends, you should stick to your guns. At the same time, as I said, things just change. The world changes, but the scriptures don't change, and the order of the spiritual master doesn't change. Certainly, our denial of this impersonalism doesn't change.